to the International House of Horrors.
Hello, valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors podcast, your sanctuary of spooky for all things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre. And we've got a little bit of an interesting week here this week. I shouldn't even say interesting. Josh has been very good about not going anywhere. He's held down the fort while I've had to take some time off. But Josh had some things to do this weekend, so I got a special guest filling in for Josh today, a guest that you've heard on the show before, formerly of the Hey Down in Front podcast. Will Driscoll is here with us on the show today. Will, how are you, sir?
Good, man. How you doing?
Oh, fantastic. So I expected you would be doing a German accent, but it looks like that's not going to happen.
That would just be offensive to so many people.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a tidy bit. No, I have to give Josh shit. Although every time I've been on the show, especially when he had Micah from over in Germany, he was pretty much trying to get rid of me. He was just like,
it was brutal.
But it was fun. It's all good fun.
This is only the second one he's missed, right? He's missed one other one before?
Yeah, he's only missed one other one. He's good, man. He's
slacker. He's a slacker. Don't even.
Don't even try to defend him. Yeah, don't ever come back, Josh. You fucking suck. Yeah. But no, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you sitting in. I'm having a good time. And I was going to ask if you want to do the Twilight Zone episode thing, but I remember Josh was really excited about this, this next episode that was coming up. So I figured I'd wait for him. See, I'm gonna.
Yeah. You didn't say anything about it. So I was like, he's probably not going to want to do it. So I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah. Cause when I was talking with Josh the last time, he was just so excited about that episode. He's like, oh, I really like this one. I really like this one. So I feel like it'd be fucked up to be like, hey, I did that episode that you were so excited about.
Yeah.
And as much shit as I give Josh, I really do like the guy.
Yeah.
So today we kind of in celebration of the newest Conjuring movie, the newest Conjuring Universe movie to hit the theaters, Annabelle Comes Home. We decided we're going to do the Conjuring Universe, which is a lot of fun. Went back in and revisited most of them. There's a few that I didn't get to just because I didn't have access to them. But
I got all of them except for the two, the newest Annabelle one and the La Blah Blah.
The La Llorona, which I didn't even know.
The Curse of La 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 Blah Blah Blah.
I didn't even know that was a Conjuring Universe movie.
I didn't either until I started looking up the Conjuring Universe stuff. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I heard the movie because you and Phil talked about it on Those Movie Guys a couple times, but and then I'm looking at it, I'm like, I had no idea this was a tie-in. And then to find out, you know, that James Wan was going to direct The Conjuring 3, but liked The Curse of La Llorona so much that he's having that director do The Conjuring 3.
Right, which is...
Yeah, so it's like, well, it must be okay.
I do remember it coming out, and I was bothered at first by the trailers giving away way too much. Like, I don't know if you saw any of the trailers.
I didn't even see any
of them. If you saw any of the trailers, it was, I want to say, what the hell came out around that time? But I saw it in the theater. I was at the theater a lot and saw it like 3 or 4 times. And there was probably a 3-minute trailer with one whole jump scare. I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they were giving away a ton.
It came out in April, so it probably came out around the time the Endgame came out.
Okay, so it must have been a little bit before that. What bullshit was I watching in February?
It was probably when it was on the Pet Sematary.
Oh, that's true. It was probably bad.
I mean, it's fitting for the movie, yeah.
They like to bundle those together. But yeah, they gave away a lot. And with the, well, you know what? Let's just start at the beginning. And then when we get to La Llorona, we can talk about it some. I was hoping, if it's good with you, to go chronological order.
That's fine, dude. That's actually how I watched it.
Oh, did you really? Nice.
Yeah, and it was very enjoyable. I was surprised because they did a really good job at molding these movies together, considering how they released them.
Yeah, and I was
impressed.
You know, I don't know if they, when he did The Conjuring, I don't know if he knew that he was going to do a whole universe or just see what happens.
Yeah, I doubt he knew, but I mean, They did a good job. Well, I guess we can get into it.
All right. So starting chronologically, right now there's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies total in the 7 that are released. And one more that's on the way. And so you've got The Nun, Annabelle, the 3 Annabelle movies, the 2 Conjuring movies, and The Curse of La Llorona. So starting off in chronological order, it would be The Nun would be the first one that right. would. And it's funny because a lot of these characters now have their own movies. You know, they had an origin. What was their origin movie? Where did they come from? First appearance. And The right. Nun first showed up in The Conjuring 2. But The Nun itself, this is the most recent one. I finished watching it last night. I was sitting around building some Legos, watching some Nun. And
nice.
Yeah, The Nun, I really enjoy The Nun for its aesthetic. I'm a sucker for like castles, anything kind of old world, gothic, Victorian looking, even though this isn't Victorian era. Because when I first saw the trailer for this, I thought it was a like old as shit movie. You know what I mean? Like a period piece, like took place.
Yeah, but it's period. But it's 1952. So it's and they used the World War II shit to like kind of as a reasoning to why the nun is there.
Which was a good, I thought that was good.
Valid.
They're like, yeah.
It was interesting, but like, I got really World War II nerdy about it and looked some stuff up. And the part that they were in Bucharest. They stopped bombing Bucharest in 1944. So that means, it was 1944. So that was like 7 years of the nun just chilling there, wreaking havoc in this abbey.
That is a long time. But I thought they had kind of trapped Valak in there with the crosses or whatever it was, all the religious shit that had been put up around it. When the guy says, I always thought that was what they're not trying to keep it or keep it from getting out. They're trying to keep it trapped in. I can't remember what
the same thing.
Right. Exactly what he said, though, when he, when they first went out into the forest.
I can't remember either. I watched it. I watched it on Wednesday because, like I said, I watched it. And I kind of had my hand forced to watch it in chronological order. Well, not really. I had to watch The Nun first because it was on HBO, my subscription. I canceled my HBO subscription. And it was ending the next night. So I'm like, shit, I guess I'm watching The Nun first. Right.
This has got to happen right now.
Yeah, so I watched The Nun first, and that's when I was like, you know, I'm just going to watch it all in chronological order. But yeah, I can't remember exactly what, and that was my question, is like, why would they even go into the door? Like, if it was behind the door, God ends here door,
yeah.
Like, why would they even go in there? Like, you're asking for it at this point.
You kind of know, you know, calm down. Yeah, it's like Dante, like, abandon all hope. Like, if you see that, you know shit's about to get bad.
Yeah, it's like, let me go walk past all these crosses. Half of them I have to step around because they literally put right in the middle of the pathway. Right. And go unlock this door with this old ass crazy looking key.
That's a good point. That is a good point. And in the regards to how I would rank these movies, you know how I enjoyed them. This one's actually a little bit closer to the bottom. I like it, but I think where the Conjuring universe really works well, and I talked to Shane about it after we had finished watching them all. Well, she didn't watch all of them. Whether we watched most of them. I said the movies that work really good in The Conjuring are the movies where they have great child actors. Like, for some reason, the kids in this series elevate these movies. Like, both of The Conjurings, Annabelle Creation, I feel, is a lot better than the first Annabelle.
I agree with that, actually.
Yeah, so anytime they have these kids, I don't know if it's just the universe. So The Nun didn't really have that element, and I feel it had some really cool moments. Like, I like the guy buried in the... and is that the girl from... American Horror Story?
Horror Story? Yeah, she was in the first. It's actually Vera Farmiga's sister, or I think it's her sister.
Is her sister? Oh, yeah. Sister.
Tessa Farmiga.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah.
So she's really good.
Senor Bob buried in the box. Yeah. That was very cool.
It's fucked up. Cool. I was like, man, because there's part of me that the idea of being buried alive. I think a lot of people, I shouldn't just say a part of me. I think almost anybody, if you ask them, hey, think about being buried alive. Tell me what you feel. Most people are going to say, pretty.
That's just, I mean, what can you do?
Right.
Like, you could Uma Thurman punch your fucking self out, I guess, if you were Uma Thurman.
Right, I'm coming, Pai Mei. I always love that. Yeah. There was a weird shot, too. You know, I was thought for a long time and wondered for a long time how he filmed that, her going up, when she's actually going up and the dirt's falling around her, and you get that quick, like, 2 seconds of her actually climbing through the earth.
Well, Wes Anderson recreated in Fantastic Mr. Fox. So.
It's almost the same exact thing.
It's like the same exact thing when they dig, but anyway.
Yeah,
the box is definitely, that was cool, especially when the fucking body behind it like wraps his hand right before he digs it up. It like comes up behind, and then you realize he looks back down and he's been laying on top of bones and books the whole time. It's like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable. That doesn't work for anybody. The box was, it was super cool and super, this whole thing, I think the whole movie of The Nun has some really cool images in it. And by the time we got to The Nun, you know, you're used to the jump scares and stuff like that. And that stuff's
well, they used a lot of the same gags from The Conjuring 2, which really made me mad about this movie. Like the whole, they didn't use the exact same thing, but it was basically the same thing. Like in The Conjuring 2, when the shadow's going around the wall to like, they pretty much used that exact same scare to reveal the nun. It's like, come on, man.
Which was so effective in The Conjuring 2. Like that shit was unbelievable. When I saw it in the theater, I was like, oh man. Like James Wan's just on it. He's on his game right here. But they used it again. And then this one, I think I had talked about it when the movie first came out. The end to this movie was ripped almost straight from Tales from the Crypt Demon Night, which I was like, what the fuck? Like how the, I don't know how long it's been since you've seen Demon Night or if you see Demon Night, but the way she ends up defeating the nun was the same way that Jada Pinkett Smith defeats Billy Zane.
Yeah, I don't remember.
In Demon Knight. There's and you know what? Let's just say spoilers for all these things at the top of it. Most of them are.
They've all been out long enough.
So she drinks that's the same thing. Because the blood in the. What was the blood? It was the blood of Jesus that was in the little globe?
Yeah, it was the blood of Jesus. That was my next question, is how do you keep blood wet for 2,000 years?
But that's the same thing that happened in Demon Knight. They had all put their blood, and there's like the blood of Jesus is in there? That is a good question, though. Maybe it was that special little ball, that egg, the see-through egg that went around it.
It's still, 2,000 years is a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
You just have a pile of dirt that used to be blood.
Just dust.
Get Richard Hammond in there, and he'll start fucking cloning Jesus.
He starts cloning Jesus.
Jesus DNA.
I'm the Jesus DNA. So anyways, where were we? The blood, she ends up spitting her face. That always bothered me. I was like, man, that's lazy. Because that movie's not even old enough. I feel like if something's super, 50, 60, 70 years old, you might be able to get away with, hey, I pulled this plot point. I thought it was really cool and I threw it in my movie. But when the movie's only 20 years old, I feel like it's hard to do that when it's almost scene for scene. Now, the actual nun herself, I think the design of the nun is fantastic. That's a creepy.
Yeah, and I feel like she got, like, they did a better job with her as they kept using her in the movies. Because she was also, they used her in another movie. It wasn't just The Nun and The Conjuring 2. Wasn't she in another one of them?
I don't. She was in one of the Annabelle's, but it was only in a photograph. It was in Creation.
Oh, yeah. That was so cool. Yeah, they used that photograph because the Annabelle Creation came out first, right?
Yeah, before The Nun. Creation was 2017, and The Nun was 2018.
Yeah, and then that's how it's like just one little thing that ties, and it's not always something that's in the Warren's home that ties it together. It's like they use that photograph, which I thought was just perfect
because it was just the nun that's with them is like, oh, because the father asked, well, who's that nun back there? And she's like, oh, I never noticed her in the picture before. And you turn it just in the light the right way, and
it was like a Pokemon hologram card.
Nun, I choose you, Valak. Go.
Could you have? So one of the cool Easter eggs I saw when watching this time, and I feel like it's something I could steal in like IMDb trivia, but I actually noticed it while watching the movie. When Father Burke and I can't remember the character's name of the nun.
The actual nun's name.
No, not Valak. The girl that comes with Father Burke.
Oh,
sister.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just looking I got this pulled up on. I should have these up on IMDb because right now I'm just looking at a list.
Anyway, so they show up to the village and they get Frenchie to go help them to the take us up to the Abbey, and it shows a truck pull away. Right.
Right.
On the back of that truck, the license plate says 6VA01LAK.
Ah, that's pretty sweet.
So it says Valak on the fucking license plate of the car or of that truck, which I thought was really cool. Like a little tiny Easter egg. I saw that in a bunch, like those little like word Easter eggs while watching these.
And they're really good about doing it too. And some of the other ones as we get a little, our sister Irene was her name. As we get into the
Irene, it was Irene, okay.
As we get a little bit further into the movies, Valak. That's a good name too.
Yeah, I do gotta say though, I liked it more because that was only the second time I've seen it. Because I really didn't like it the first time I saw it, but I did like it more on the second watch. It's still definitely, like you said, probably the weakest of all of them so far. But I don't know. It's got some good scares. It's got some. I usually don't like origin story movies, but this one fit for the universe,
right? And it's,
you know, like,
yeah, for sure. And if you get the, I think there's stuff that could be creepy for almost anybody. Like just the Silent Hill moment of it all, when all the nuns have the bags or the sheets pulled tight over their heads with the blood all over it, and the you get the, you know, the weird necks cracking all over the place.
Yeah, the nurses.
Yeah, exactly.
Like from Silent Hill. Yeah.
There's the Silent Hill stuff.
And that's the other thing too, that like the guys leave and he's like, okay, well you can go now, Frenchie. We don't, you know, come back in a couple of days. And he's like walking through the woods to get to his horse and wagon, and he sees like a nun dragging a noose. It's like, that's you don't follow her. Right. You go to your fucking horse, bro. Right.
You ride away real fast. You just take off as quick as possible.
That's another thing that drove me crazy about the movie, is like that everybody experiencing their own little thing all happened like one after another. Like it was like Frenchie did his little torment thing through the forest, and then Father Burke had the kid who he just finished telling the story about that was dead. It's like, you know, this kid is dead. Why are you chasing him around this place?
Right.
and then right after that, she has her whole experience in that little thing where the Jesus's head's knocked off.
Oh, yeah.
That's when. But it's like, it's all like one, like they didn't even spread it out. They were just like, boom, boom, boom. Okay, now we can finish this movie.
And you know, the thing with these movies, the crazy thing with all these Conjuring movies, for the most part, they're making them for really cheap. I think the Conjuring movies, like the core movies, are pretty expensive. But I bet you the Annabelle, the newest one, budget, if I had to take a stab in the dark, I'd say $15 million, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
They make these,
that's the thing. They're cheap horror movies, but they don't look like cheap horror movies.
They put their money in the right places. Yeah. They say, okay, we can do this, we can do that. Put the money where it goes, and the Nun is fine. It's a fun movie and that's the thing, is none of these movies are really bad. I would say, what's the next one on our list?
The Nun's budget was $22 million estimated.
Okay, so like right on 15, 20 million somewhere right in there. Which is nothing, though, because I feel like it made 90 or 100 million even domestically over the course of its run. I know it made a...
Yeah, that's why those kind of movies are successful. It's because they're cheaply made. They don't put a shit ton... That's when like the bad horror movies get bad, is because the effects get really bad.
Which sucks.
You know, well, that and the acting. When the acting suffers, the movie suffers for sure.
Which is, in horror, you had probably almost more than any other genre, you really have to believe your characters... Unless it is a campy movie and they know what they're doing. They say, hey, we're making a film that's reminiscent of, you know, camp 80s slasher. Okay, that's great. Yeah, let the acting be that. But in a movie like this where you have to believe somebody's walking down a dark hallway and they're really terrified, if you fuck...
Well, I feel like most of that $22 million is probably spent on those actors. I mean, they're not low budget.
No.
I wouldn't think. They're probably pulling in... Not fucking Marvel numbers, obviously.
No, but nobody is.
They're not making Marvel numbers, so it makes sense.
I did see RDJ was tweeting about getting everybody out this weekend. Like, come on, you could do it.
Trying to get that extra push?
Trying to get that extra push.
Cheap.
I know. Bullshit. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on from the Nun. Did you have any final thoughts on the Nun, or are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go, I think.
Okay, so...
Other than I think Valak is more of a Sith Lord than an actual demon.
Yeah, Valak...
got the yellow eyes, and when it appears at the bottom of that chapel, it walks towards Frenchie and just, like, puts its hand out, and the shotgun comes right to its hand.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's a Sith.
Well, and didn't... who did it... Didn't it throw... Was it Frenchie that... No, it was Father Burke that got thrown on the wall and was pinned to the wall that was, like, force-pushed up against the wall?
It happens in The Conjuring too. Also,
she does it to Lorraine.
It's like her move. Boom! It's like the Nun's. That's the Nun's finisher. Scream push to the wall.
Finish it. She's a banshee. Okay, so next chronologically, year the story was 1955, and the year of release was 2017. Annabelle Creation. This was the other one that I watched. Watched yesterday.
So after Joe from Empire Records retired, he started taking up doll making.
I didn't even realize that was him. And I've seen Empire Records a lot.
Yeah, that was him.
vampire records. What was it? Manning? Rex Manning? Sexiest man alive?
Yeah, with that fucking hair.
Ah, that hair was rough, but it was beautiful at the same time. So anyways, Annabelle Creation, which Annabelle is the glue that really holds all of these together. I feel like she's the one.
Which is weird.
Yeah, but going back and watching them, the first Conjuring, she was the first thing you see. Like in the very first Conjuring movie, yeah, it opens up and that doll's face, that fucking terrifying doll. And did you see the one they did that Trick or Treat Studios is doing this year?
No, but what is it, $8,000?
$500.
Jesus Christ.
But it's, I mean, they showed a picture of it next to the Talkie Tina doll that I've got, and the thing is huge. Like it looks like it's screen used. They had that one, they had a Child's Play from Child's Play 2. They had a Good Guy doll that's pretty fantastic. That was $500.
Yeah. I mean, Trick or Treat Studios makes some great shit, but I mean, I'm sorry, their price ranges are not reaching the right crowd.
No, no, for that stuff, dude. You can get the smaller stuff. Like, I think that's where I ordered my Halloween 2018 mask, and it wasn't bad. It was like $50-$60. But some of that stuff,
the masks are fine. It's like those big, like the Chucky doll was like $600 almost, and it did nothing.
No, it just sat there and was Chucky.
Yeah, I mean, it comes in the cool box, yeah. And I get licensing is expensive, but I don't know, man. Make 100 more dolls and sell them for a little bit cheaper and get your money back that way. Right. I don't know, whatever. I'm on an executive. What do I know?
You know that you want to get a Chucky doll, but you don't want to pay $500 for it because they are beautiful. But you're right.
That's a video game system, dude. A video game system as much as that doll that just sits in the corner. Right. Like, you know what I mean?
No, it's true. It is, man. This stuff, and even in the DC preview, so I was looking through the previews at the comic books that were coming out. They have a 1-to-1 scale Harley Quinn in the previews. Like normal, this is what, you know, your normal comic book person goes into the comic shop, gets the previews, figure out what they want to order. It was like $5,200, I want to say. Damn. But the thing is 5'8". They're like, it comes in a bunch of boxes. Usually that's stuff that never goes to consumer. You know, it goes to your comic person might buy it at wholesale. Like, hey, it'll look cool in the shop. You know, I'll stick it in the window, get some people to come in. But yeah, $5,200. Like, who are you selling to?
Yeah, hey, if you're a collector and you can afford something like that, good on you. But the average viewer or comic reader, like, they're just not, it's not there for them, you know?
And even just to have space to put a 5-foot, unless you're, you know, some weirdo who's doing weird shit to his Harley statue. Like,
that's true. Yeah. What are you going to put clothes on it to? Like, change its outfits?
He's my best friend.
Come with the Arkham Asylum outfit or something?
You're my best friend. That Arkham Asylum outfit was great. All the Batman games, man, them were good. I was digging through some boxes the other day and found a bunch of the figures from Arkham Knight that I had stashed away down there. Those games were good, man. Anyways,
they were good.
Yeah. We digress. We're talking about Batman. All right. So Annabelle Creation. This is our origin story. So in the timeline, they've made the Conjuring movies and then worked backwards to give us the origins, which makes sense.
Yeah, we got a Conjuring, and then they made that first Annabelle, and then we got the second Conjuring, and then we got the Annabelle and then the Nun.
Right. And now we've got the newest Annabelle. Yeah,
this came out. I mean, it made you kind of, if you paid attention, the way they did that opening, they spent time on that opening, you knew you were going to get an Annabelle movie in the Conjuring. So. Right. And then I think, like, again, this movie, I wish they would have made this movie first, the Creation first, before they made the one that they did, because I feel like if they had all this storyline here, the other one would have been better.
Right. And this is the better movie of the two, for sure, between
I agree.
Between Annabelle and Creation. But you're right. The first one is a little bit more enjoyable because of the connection to this one.
Right, yeah. But standalone, because I watched the first one first. I guess we can kind of talk about both these at the same time, since they're right in order timeline-wise, if you want.
Yeah, we can do both side by side. Yeah, because it was, what, 55 and 67. So these are the next two movies chronologically, even though they were 3 years apart in production. So, go ahead.
I just, I don't know. This movie, it really had the footing for the rest of the series. Or for the other one. And it's kind of weird that I don't know. Usually when they make a prequel, it just doesn't turn out as well. And this one did for some reason.
And again, my argument would be that you have these kids that are just super talented.
They were really great. Yeah.
Especially the, I can't remember her name, the youngest one. She wasn't, why can't I remember who she is now? She's the little girl that was in... Did you watch either of the Ouija movies? She was in the second Ouija. Book of Evil?
No, I never saw them. Which girl was she in this movie, though?
So she...
The one that got possessed?
No, her best friend.
Oh, Linda?
Was it Linda? Oh, yeah, you're right. So Lulu Wilson. I got the thing pulled up here. Yeah, she's fantastic. I think that girl can sell just about anything. And I noticed her first in Origin of Evil, and this came out the year after Origin of Evil. But all the kids in this movie were really good at selling this idea, and I think that's where the Conjuring universe plays so good, because you have this unstoppable, not unstoppable, but for the most part, really malevolent, almost unstoppable force attacking children, which is a scary thought. It's like evil versus innocence almost, because they do play these kids up as being pretty innocent. But you're right.
Well, that's the kind of role that they take in the whole, like you said, the whole Conjuring universe. It's like the you know, you need to get, for the demon to take your soul, it needs to be offered, but the children and babies can't offer their souls.
Right. So they use the children. Yeah. They're manipulating children in some of these instances to the kids.
That and that like black demon thing, it kind of... See, when I first saw these movies, I kind of thought that was a bit of an Insidious tie to the demon with, like, the Darth Maul demon.
Yeah.
And I was like, because these movies are so much older, it's like maybe he didn't paint his face red yet. But then when you see him more and more, like, that, like, oh, man, when the girl goes underneath the stairs and sees the Annabelle doll sitting underneath the stairs, and then the demon's, like, all you see is his eyes and his teeth.
Yeah.
In the background, dude, that's fucking nightmare fuel. Dude.
It really like, is.
That's the kind of shit you close your eyes and actually can still see. It's like, oh my God.
And then, yeah, you look into the dark corner of a room for too long, you start seeing that shit, and you're like, ah, man, this is, you're right, though. And he did a really good job. And who directed this one? It was Sandberg directed this one. And I think with a lot of these Conjuring movies, they do a good job with leaving most of that stuff to the imagination. Like you said, you only get the eyes, or you'll see the eyes, and then they'll be in this one when, because what was the name of the little girl who got Janice?
Janice, yeah.
When Janice, you know, is now full on getting possessed, and she's looking at Mr. Mullins, and she steps back away from, I think it was the dining room, and the eyes start to glow like they were in the picture, and then it starts to get taller. All you see is the eyes getting taller, and you see the eyes grow.
Right.
Like, oh, that's solid. Like, that's... Yeah. That's good what you're doing there, friend. Keep doing that, because that's...
I was actually really surprised that he died.
That who died? Mullins?
Mr. Mullins. Yeah. That I guess it kind of came like he was going to defend the demon and help, you know, help the girls fight it or whatever, and then it's just like, boom, you're done.
And they killed him and his
fighting chance.
They killed Esther pretty quick, too. She was...
Well, they killed her pretty quick after, yeah.
Which was, which is good. Left her ass just chopped right in half. Which kind of surprised me, because The Conjuring usually isn't... I'm trying to think. It's usually not super violent like that. Like, I feel like they don't show a ton of gore, but to show her body pegged to the wall...
Yeah, I mean, that's all it really showed was...
Yeah, that's true.
It's not like it actually showed her get ripped in half or anything like that. But yeah, it was still really cool. But then where were her legs, though? Like, you never showed where her legs were.
Somebody took them.
It's like, and then she was dragging herself across. And that was cool, too. And I actually saw that movie after I had read Nosferatu, and it reminded me of the scene in Nosferatu when Vic is in the laundry chute at the
carriage house.
Yeah, at the carriage house.
Yeah, that was creepy.
I mean, I guess probably just because it's the laundry chute, but just the way, because I read the book and I was watching that, I was like, oh, this is how I can imagine that being in the show. And then, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Nosferatu yet, it's pretty picture on for the book.
Yeah. That book is good, man. I'm glad you put me on that.
That last season was, oh God, or that last couple episodes was just so great.
It was good. And it blew my mind though, reading the book, that I was like, damn, I'm only, you know, 250 pages, 300 pages into the 700 page book. And that's where the series ended. The first season of the series ended.
Right. Right.
I'm like, okay, what are they going to do? What are they going to do next? I'm excited about it. All right, so we were talking about Mrs. Mullins getting chopped in half. And she was kind of... Everything about this Annabelle creation, I think, was just elevated by the setting. You know, they kind of trapped him out in the middle of nowhere. The girls really didn't...
Where were they? That's what I couldn't... Like, most of those movies have, like, where it is. But I don't know if I was writing something down or whatever, but I missed, like, where... And I even looked it up, and I couldn't find...
Yeah, I don't know if they...
Where that took place.
I don't know if they ever give you a... Because I don't think they even showed as they were going into town, like that first kind of swooping shot into town when it goes into the doll shop after, you know, the opening right. little montage of him creating the dolls. Yeah, I don't know if they do or not, if they really show that stuff. But I want to say California, because that's where Annabelle ended up.
Yeah, that's where she ended up, in San Diego or L.A.?
Somewhere near there. In the desert area. But it looked like it could have been California, like somewhere out just outside of San Diego or Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But the house looked like the house. I swear that's the same house from Sinister 2. The exterior shot looked a lot.
Maybe, yeah.
Looked a lot like that house.
I really liked Sinister 2.
Yeah. I like those Sinister. There's some creepy-ass videos, man. Kids killing other kids. Yeah, yeah, but even looking at the box office for this one, you know, $15 million budget, estimated opening weekend, $35 million. And made over $100 million. That's how you make a horror movie. And that's how you just keep...
Yeah, for sure.
So Warner Brothers can do like this, right? But they can't do a fucking Batman movie to save their life.
Yeah, well, too many chefs in the kitchen there.
That's true.
after they killed Mr. Mullins, I feel like the movie really rushed to the end because it went, like you said, like, boom, right after that, his wife was killed, and then it really started. But I don't know, maybe that's when it was like, okay, the strong presence of the house is gone. Let's get this done.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's the mentality there. Because the movie seemed rushed after that point. It was like dragging. Then it's like the last, you know, 20, 30 minutes. It was just like, boom, okay, oh, shit, this is over already?
It did. You know? It did happen really quick at the end. And it's a long movie for a horror movie. I think it comes in just under 2 hours, somewhere right around there, like an hour and 45, 50 minutes.
Hour 49, yeah.
Yeah, so for a horror movie, that's a good, decent little runtime. And I don't know.
That's as long as the first Conjuring movie, actually, I think.
Yeah, it seems about it, because the second Conjuring movie was like 220?
215.
215, 220?
Yeah, I just watched that one last night, yeah.
But with this one, you had a lot of great little scares building up to that. And that's what these movies do so well. And the crazy thing is that we know there's nothing actually in the doll. They repeatedly tell you, like, there's nothing in the doll. The doll's a conduit. There's nothing at all there.
Yeah.
But they still show you that doll, and it's still creepy as shit. It's like you...
Oh, yeah, it's terrifying looking.
Yeah. That yeah. doll is a nightmare. And so we get some good buildup, but you're right. As soon as we get to that point, it does move relatively quickly. And I don't know if it's just because, or maybe the demon, it took so long to finally get her. Because once she was on her little rampage, once she stood up and got legs, that was it. She was moving.
Yeah, it was done. And, okay, so what I really like is, like, after all that, and it does this rampage, and the stuff in the barn with the scarecrow was so fucking cool, man.
Yeah, executed flawlessly. That slow head turn when the headlights are first flicking on and off and that thing's just barely moving. Yeah.
Right. And then the girls get out and run. It's like, why?
Where are you going to go?
Yeah, it's going to chase you down.
Yeah.
I guess you trip the one you like the least, so that way it stays on that one for a while.
Just knock her down.
But the way that this movie really sold it for me was the end when it goes to the new owners. So the girl gets adopted at the end.
You know what, though? We never talked about... Should we be talking about the connections? We never talked about the... Well, I guess we can talk about it when we get to The Conjuring, where the connection from the nun was. Because these connections, like you said, are so beautifully done.
Yeah. Well, we talked about the connection to Annabelle creation while we were talking about the nun, how they, you know, all it was a little picture. That was it.
But yeah, I was thinking the connection of Frenchie to the Conjuring universe. Because he was the...
Right.
Yeah. But okay, anyways.
He's not there yet.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Is he?
No. Yeah, he's not there yet.
But the... So it goes to the end of the movie, and it shows the little girl who got possessed. She disappeared because they stuffed her in the Bible wall, and she disappears. And then she gets adopted under another name, under the name Annabelle. And then it shows her with the Raggedy Ann doll.
Yeah. That was a good
nod. In the picture with her parents, which was really, really nice touch, considering that the real Annabelle doll is a Raggedy Ann doll, for people that don't know, I guess.
Yeah, that was a really solid nod.
Yeah, but then what I really, really, really liked was the murder scene of her parents, which is like maybe 10 minutes into the first Annabelle movie, just Annabelle. But you see it from the POV inside of their bedroom, whereas in Annabelle, you see it from the neighbor's bedroom.
You see it through our primary protagonist in the Annabelle movie. You see it from their room. And I don't know how they did that, because, I mean, these were a few years apart, and that shit looked like it was done at the same exact time.
They must have filmed both and just decided not to use the interior
shots. Oh, I see what you're saying. did it for, and maybe they knew, but you know, you had sent me an article like yesterday, the day before, where these people making these movies are like, I don't even know if it's part of the Conjuring universe.
Oh yeah. That was a satire. Yeah.
Right. And sometimes yeah. though, I wonder though, like it was a joke, but at the same time, you know, you have all these different directors coming on. It's not like it's the same creative team from start to finish. So I wonder if there is somebody who, cause these two are 3 years apart.
There were 4 years apart.
Was it four?
Annabelle came out in... No, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so... Yeah,
Annabelle came out in 14, and Annabelle Creation came out in 17.
But even still, 3 years apart, so they were, you know, probably filming the first Annabelle in 2012, 2013, doing it then. Yeah, probably 2013, because it's a little bit of a lower budget. But it does, you know... It makes me wonder who is all... Is there somebody who's kind of orchestrating this whole thing? Like, does James Wan say, hey, at least go this way, go that way? Or are they just finding ways to connect it? Because the scene you're talking about in particular was so well done. So well done from that reverse angle.
Both movies are written by the same guy. They're both written by Gary Duberman.
Oh, okay.
So maybe he... I don't know, he knew? I really think that they filmed that those interior shots, maybe not necessarily knowing that they were going to use it for the next movie, but then just decided to do it from... Because the character in Annabelle's name is Mia, so okay. they were just like, you know, let's just do all this for Mia's people. Like, let's never ever go into the neighbor's house, which they didn't. You never went in there. You saw John run in there, which I guess at this point we could probably wrap right into Annabelle.
Yeah. So we're moving on to this is the next one in the chronological timeline, 1967. This movie, this was the one that came out right after The Conjuring. So this is the second movie actually released in the universe, but it came the timeline was 1967. And Will's describing the opening, the whole opening sequence of this movie. You just have a young couple, pregnant woman. She sees some shit on TV about the Manson family and this idea of the occult becoming more prevalent in the community. And then, he hears a...
I mean, that was the time for it. You know, right. That was the pan, this, you know, I guess that's probably the start of the Satanic Panic a little bit, right?
Yeah. Right around then.
It then went through, it went from there all the way to the mid 80s or so, maybe even the early 90s.
And now you're starting to see a little bit of a resurgence, which I think is great because people are kind of having fun with it, doing these,
make good movies.
Yeah. Making, right.
Yeah. But yeah, they do the whole church thing. Is the thing with the nurses that was the beginning of The Conjuring, is that the end of this movie or is it the opening sequence?
It's the end of this one because it's her mom.
Okay.
Her mom goes into the thrift shop or whatever it is and sees the doll and is like, I've been looking everywhere for one of these. My daughter's a nursing student and I want to give her one.
Right, but that's all you see though. You don't, because there's actually the interview with the Warrens at the beginning of this one, I think, about that.
Was, no, I'm trying to think back.
Like before the title card.
Right, yeah. Were there, they show her in the glass case? I feel like you see that doll in that glass case a lot.
Yeah.
But either way.
But because the murder of the couple next door, Annabelle's parents, that's about 10 minutes in or so because they do the church sequence and then, I guess maybe not quite 10 minutes in, but they're at church and stuff and they talk and, you know, get really awkward and stuff because I guess their neighbors gave them a ride to church.
And they're, and their neighbors, you quickly learn. Yeah, because they say something weird about... I want to say, like, it hasn't been that long since, or so, there's,
Annabelle.
Right, since yeah, something since Annabelle happened
left,
with Annabelle.
And the husband's, like, kind of insensitive about it. It's like, she was a grown woman. She probably left and joined some kind of, she's probably left and ran off with the hippies, right. what he said.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, she disappeared, but, you know, she's a grown woman. And it was the 60s, you know, you can't text your mom every 10 minutes.
Right. and she's still... Hey, you got me racking my brain though. If there was that, I guess it doesn't really matter. If the Warrens did show up at the beginning of this one, I want to say they did.
It was the same opening scene from the Warrens aren't in it.
No,
it's
no,
the
no,
same scene from the first Conjuring, but it's like not as in depth because the first Conjuring movie shows like the doll go into the trash and show up, but it's like just the nurses talking. It doesn't even you hear Ed asking a couple questions and stuff, but
you don't actually see it.
Okay. Yeah, you don't actually see it because they're not credited in the movie at all.
No, I didn't think you saw any of it. I just couldn't remember if it happened right there at the beginning. But I think, right.
I think it did.
You're right.
Maybe.
Okay. So anyways, they go home and very kind of cookie cutter, nuclear young couple from the mid-60s. She sees some bad shit on TV. And he's like, oh, turn that down. I'm trying to be a doctor. Like, don't you want me to be a doctor and do doctor things? And
I gotta make the money to pay for this place in your damn doll collection.
Yeah, she did have a crazy doll collection. She puts my collection to shame. But no, and the murder scene is really cool though. And because, like you said, it's just him running in and out of the house. They hear screams in the middle of the night. Ah, ah. She runs in and out of the house. And then we see a grown woman back in the house with, and what was Mia back in the, no, Mia was the baby. Was me?
No, Mia is the name of the
mom
actress. Her name, her real name is Annabelle Willis, I believe.
Oh, so her real name is Annabelle?
Yeah, her real name is Annabelle, yeah. Yeah, her name is Mia in the movie. I can't remember. Leah. It was Leah.
Yeah, I do remember their names rhymed. Mia and Leah.
Yeah.
So, but Mia, we see this woman kind of floating behind Mia as she's trying to call the paramedics, and she whispers to her, like, I like your dolls. Real creepy, yeah. Creepy stuff. Now, in the whole pantheon of these Conjuring movies, this is actually the one that I feel is the weakest out of all of them. There's not a lot in this movie that I enjoy. There's some moments, and I think there's some elements that are cool, but at the same time, and maybe part of it was I was coming off of The Conjuring when I'd seen this for the first time in the theater. I don't know, but I just feel it's long. It takes forever to get where it wants to go. The scene in the elevator I thought was really good, but again, it's Demons in the Shadows. But I think almost always
the scene
works.
In the elevator was good, but that whole sequence after the elevator was better when she's running up the stairs and then it's on the steps behind her. And as you just see that black painted figure in its face, dude, oh, yeah, man, that's good.
And you can hear it kind of like doom, 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 doom coming up the,
it's got those Michael or those Jason steps from that Never Hike Alone movie.
That was great too. No matter what the terrain was, same exact sound.
I'm going to step in this mud.
Doom, 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 doom. Yeah, that was good. But you're right. So there were some cool, spooky moments in it, like going up the stairwell and the elevator. So I think that whole sequence is really good. But the kids drawing the pictures, and I did see that the La Llorona, the connection, was one character from the universe. I don't know what the character is, but I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say it was the priest. I want to say it most likely was the priest, but I'm not sure. I didn't read anything.
You mean Omar from Scarface?
Right.
Yeah. Kind of looked like him.
Omar from Scarface.
What's his name? Murray Anderson or something like that?
Yeah. It was, and I can't remember. That did the priest, though, I feel like I'd seen in something else before, but you go ahead. Whatever.
He's not in any of the other Conjuring movies, I don't think.
See, but that makes me wonder, though, if he was in La Llorona.
Let me see the curse of, he's Father Perez. He's the same character.
Yeah. So, and the only reason I guess that was most likely him after I'd read that is that, cause he was speaking to her in Spanish. So it made me wonder if he didn't come from somewhere else where he might've been the pastor, you know, at a Spanish speaking church.
I mean, it's Catholicism. There's a good chance he's not from where he's at.
Right. And so he could have been sent from somewhere else.
Right. They get ordained elsewhere and then get sent places, like stationed almost, from what I understand. I'm not Catholic, but that's my understanding of it.
Yeah, and for a while they were using that in a terrible, terrible way. Oh, you did.
Yeah,
exactly.
He was also in The Devil's Candy. That might be where you recognize him from.
Maybe. I was thinking he was in...
He was the art dealer. Wasn't he the art dealer? Like the crazy art
dealer?
Oh,
yes,
yes. Yeah, that was a cool movie.
That was a cool movie, man. And that was another Empire Records connection. Ethan Embry.
Oh, yeah, it's got Ethan Embry, yeah.
Okay, so first Annabelle, now the rest of this movie is pretty much cat and mouse game between demonic presence and innocent blood, like you said, and it's explained to us again. This is actually the first time it's explained in the way that the baby can't give up its soul, and then we quickly learn that the demon is trying to get Mia's soul by threatening the baby.
Yeah, and... I feel like that the neighbor kind of like volunteered too quickly. It's like, you just met these fucking people.
Oh, to jump out the window? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you just met these people.
Yeah. As if she had some sort of moral obligation to them due to her falling asleep at the wheel and her daughter dying. I do like her a lot, though. She's been in,
That actress?
Yeah. She was in Civil War, 12 Years a Slave. She's been in a lot of things. She's good. She's done a lot of TV work at the same time. But she was good. But yeah, she did go quick, didn't she? She's just like, fuck it, I'll take the bullet. Like, here we go, out the window.
Well, nobody's asked me how my daughter passed ever, so she's the first person, so I guess I'll just commit my soul right to her.
And that's the thing is, knowing what she was doing, like, did she know she was voluntarily giving up her soul for, because in this world, you're giving up your soul for eternity. And she was,
I don't think so. I don't think she realized it. I don't think so. It's like, this is more than just, you know, I'm going to kill myself, you know, to save this little baby. This is, you know, this is eternity of torture and pain.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm giving my soul to a demon.
Yeah. Your next neighbors might not have been possessed.
Right. You moved into the wrong building. You should just let that woman jump out the window. Yeah. So, and this one I feel didn't have as many of the truly creepy moments. Like you said, the stairwell was good. The elevator was good. But it was the kids drawing pictures, the record would play, the doll would fall in front of a door. There wasn't a lot there. I did like the priest in the car. I thought,
oh yeah, that was good.
Yeah, where the radio starts to go, and then it's just, may God have mercy on you. You know, and it really starts to ramp up.
And then even when he got out of the car with the doll, and it pans like through the, like it goes backwards through the window, and then Annabelle, the ghost of Annabelle, is sitting in there.
Yeah, that's cool.
In the car, and then he turns around and she's walking towards him, and her like her torso is all covered in blood and shit. And he's like, "Fuck!"
Yeah, and he sees her. They make the church
and it, like, kicks him out.
Yeah, that force push, man.
Yeah,
everybody's got the force push. But
so far in chronologically, we've only been introduced to two demons. It's Valak and whatever the name of this demon that's in Annabelle is called, which we never actually find out its name.
I don't think you. No. Oh wait, yeah, because you only get the name in The Conjuring of Bathsheba. Was that demon? But I don't think you get the Annabelle demon's name.
Maybe you doing. You didn't see. I'm assuming you didn't see the new movie.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to go. I wanted to go yesterday morning, but didn't get a chance.
And I wanted to go, but I didn't have a babysitter, so there was no way to go. I tried. I was called
taking a kid with you. I guess. Yeah. I mean,
we thought about that too. Dress her up as Annabelle and just take her with us. Go first thing in the morning.
Every time I look at the score on IMDb, it's getting lower and lower.
Right.
It started out like a 7.2, and now it's like a 6.5. I'm like, oh man.
But people are assholes. People are assholes for the sake of being assholes. Especially with
this one's got like a 6. This Annabelle movie's got like a 6.2, and I think that's probably pretty fair, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not a bad movie, but I think for me in this world, I just enjoy the other ones more. That might be personal preference more than anything else.
Yeah, this is in place for last with this and The Nun for me. Like you said earlier, The Nun's got cool things and the really cool aesthetic, but overall, I think it's a really weak movie.
But what these movies just don't have is the kids that I feel carried all of the other ones to that next level. So we'll go on to the next one, which is actually the first one released. Came out in 2013, and this takes place in 1971, the first Conjuring. So this is the one that started it all, and man, as many times as I've seen this movie, and it's been quite a few times, I've probably seen this movie a dozen times or more, it still is just, everything's there. It's
good,
all the pieces.
We watched it yesterday morning. Like, we didn't even eat breakfast, actually. We just both, me and my wife made a cup of coffee. Because, I try to watch two movies a night for a couple of these, but I'm just, like, getting old and tired, man.
Right.
I can't do two movies a night as well anymore. But so anyway, I woke up. I was like, shit, I got The Conjuring left and The Conjuring 2 left before we recorded this morning. And I've seen both of these movies, like you said, enough times where I probably didn't have to watch them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really wanted to watch them. So we made coffee and sat down, and even my wife's sitting there. She's like, I cannot believe I'm watching it. Cause she's not a huge horror fan. Like, I'm sitting here watching a horror movie at 8 o'clock in the morning. She's like, but it's so good.
It really is. Everything about it was just, the casting was right. The director, if James Wan can do any one thing really well, he can do stuff with that camera. His direction is just unbelievable. Even in Aquaman, some of the things he was doing, like, I'm starting to be able to, to be able to notice James Wan's eye. The same way I can watch a lot of things and be like, yeah, that's got Spielberg written on it or Hitchcock written on it. You know, Kurosawa. I feel like James Wan, he does some neat shit with the camera. And this is no exception to any of that.
No, you're absolutely right, because it's like that fluid movement.
Yeah.
And you know that that's James Wan. Or at least if he's not behind the camera, he's got his hand in there somewhere.
Right.
Because it's got that, like, that fluid movement that just like the camera never seems to like it settles into place. It never actually like stops.
Right. It's not a it's hard just, stop.
Like yeah. Yeah, it'll go and like peek around the corner and it'll come back and he'll like it'll like rock itself into place and it's it that that's his, that that's I don't know if he does that in I know he does it in Insidious and I know he does it in both these Conjuring movies. I feel like I wasn't paying close enough attention for Fate of the Furious because I mean you know what that movie was.
It's
a dumb action movie.
And some of that stuff is very different. But even you see it in Aquaman. Like if you watch Aquaman, it's
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah,
yeah. I would say watch Aquaman just to see his camera work because there's some great action sequences in Aquaman. But even in this, when the camera's coming in behind the family when they're all carrying the boxes in, you're going like under people and up. Like you said, it's just this fluid, moving motion, which he does. And I don't think there was a ton of it in Saw, but I want to say he was just restricted then. Like he probably didn't have the budget to do a bunch of that stuff. Cause I want to say Saw.
He probably didn't have the budget to do it. Or, I mean, honestly, that movie, it wasn't, I feel like it would have felt out of place.
Yeah. Cause everything was very self-contained. That's why he made Saw that way. It was like, how do we make a movie in one room and make it cheap? How do we make a movie on the cheap?
Right. Like if you go back and watch Saw, you would think, oh, somebody's just copying James Wan. It's like, oh no, that is James Wan.
Right. Yeah. Somebody's trying to be a turkey bacon James Wan.
Yeah.
The
turkey bacon.
Yeah. So this is our first introduction to Ed and Lorraine, where we actually see them acting things out. Because you do see them in at the end of The Nun, but you only see them in video. And then in this one, in Annabelle,
which
was
is
the same.
The video is from this movie.
Yeah. So Vera Farmiga, Patrick Wilson, amazing on-screen chemistry as Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Right.
Absolutely,
I 100% agree.
And I've been a huge fan of both of them for a very long time, especially her. I want to say The Departed is when I really noticed her. And I was like, hey, all right.
Really noticed her in The Departed.
And Patrick Wilson's always been good. Lily Taylor, Ron Livingston. I wish Ron Livingston would do more. I feel like the guy, I feel like he doesn't do enough.
I agree. And we were sitting there watching this yesterday, and my wife's like, I wish they didn't cast Ron Livingston in this. I'm like, why? He's like, because I can't not see Office Space.
Right.
I'm like, you got it. He's better than that. Like, he's not just a dude who doesn't care. He's got a family and a wife and kids in this one, babe.
Like, and he really plays it well. He really plays like, the dad trying to get stuff figured out. And that's the true nightmare of this movie is thinking about having five daughters. Being like, ah, oh, fuck.
What's well, a yeah? It's like oh, so you just kept trying, right? And you just gave up
like after
you,
5 years.
You kept trying for that boy,
right?
And then you fucked up and got a girl dog.
That poor dog too. A young, well, she's still young, but a much younger Joey King in this one, who is fantastic. Been following her as she's been progressing throughout her career, and my oldest is a big fan of her. But she was all the girls in this thing were wonderful. And
that's the girl in The Act, right? That new show on Hulu.
Yeah. Yeah. She's done a lot of stuff. But I want to say she also just did that.
Oh, Slender Man. She was in Slender Man.
And she was one of the best things about Slender Man. Did you ever watch Slender Man?
Mm-mm. After you said it was shit, I'm like, oh, Joe doesn't like it. I ain't watching it.
Yeah. I started reading more about it though. And I guess what had happened, and I wish I could have seen an original cut of that movie. Is they at the very end of it, the studio got scared about the backlash that was going to come. And I guess something around 45 minutes of that movie got cut and they took out so much good shit. And that's why you didn't have any of the character development.
Oh, really? I mean, it's an hour and a half long. It's got a 3.2 on IMDb.
Yeah, it's bad. But
it's so bad.
But if you watch it, I think you'll understand why. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But
get that Zack Snyder cut.
Right.
Let's start a petition. Zack Snyder cut for the Slender Man.
500 million signatures. He didn't have anything to do with it, but we still want his cut. Because apparently,
I still want his cut.
Right. Zack Snyder's the end-all, be-all. Got to have the Snyder cut. So this first Conjuring is the first time that these movies, or they, I shouldn't say the first time because it was the first one out, but they open up and tell us this is based on a real thing. Like these are based on real cases of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Right.
So this whole universe and however you feel about Ed or Lorraine Warren doesn't really matter. They wrote these books. They did these things. Some people say they were lunatics just chasing the fame. Other people say, yeah, they really had some things going on. And it's hard for me to think about somebody, I mean, pretending all of that, but who knows? Even if, you know, this stuff is fabricated for sure. But yeah. I personally don't believe that they just did it solely for the fame. But either way, these are based on their real cases that they had experienced or investigated over the course of their life.
I think that the stuff like the Valak stuff and the I don't necessarily know about. I didn't read too much about the what was the Perrin family? Perrin?
The
family in this movie.
Yeah, in this one.
Yeah, it's Perrin, right?
Perrin. Perrin. Yeah.
Perrin. I didn't really like. I don't know if the Bathsheba demon is the real entity that they were dealing with. I think that was a lot of that stuff was fabricated for the movie's sake.
Yeah.
Like you said, there are definitely real cases that this is all based off of.
And some of that stuff is hard to
Like them or not. Like it makes for entertaining storytelling,
right? And at the end of the day, it really does. It does make for some great stories. And the thing with both of them is, you know, with the Warrens, in the movie, I like that they try to, they don't automatically jump to, oh, you've got evil. They try to explain it in a rational way first. Like 9 times out of 10, this is just leaky pipes or, you know, the house is just shifting. They don't ever immediately go to, you have a demonic presence in your house. Not like the shit you see on TV nowadays, like Ghost Hunters and like, oh, did you see that white orb go by? It's terrible.
Yeah. I'm Zach Braggins, and I'm here to bro your bro.
Right. So they, like you said, they had the Perrin family. This all revolves around them. You've got Carolyn, Roger, and their five daughters. Did they move for work? Was it work?
Oh, I think that they bought a gigantic house and property in Rhode Island for cheap as shit.
Is Rhode Island cheap?
He was a truck driver. He doesn't give a shit where he lived.
And is Rhode Island still, I mean, is it a pretty inexpensive place to live?
Oh, I have no idea.
Or it was in the 70s, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I never know because I think that shit. A lot of times, you know, especially just going through the house buying process, you see these people do it. And I'm like, how is he doing that? Like, how do you get this monster of a house?
He even said he bought it at a sheriff's sale, like sight unseen, I think, probably.
That's true. Nobody wanted to live in it.
Maybe they looked at it. But yeah, it was a possessed-ass house that, according to this movie, as you go forward in it, every fucking family that lived there killed themselves.
Right.
Or the wife killed the children and then herself.
Yeah.
So, because there was multiple entities in that house. So it was, he says that. He's like, you know, we got it at a sheriff's sale.
So it was dirt cheap because everybody died.
It was probably dirt cheap. And it was also 1971, so.
Everything was dirt cheap. We took the kids to a museum yesterday, went to the zoo and went to this castle museum. And they had all these old advertisements for like, buy a wedding ring for $35. I'm like, fuck, what happened? Why can't it be that way anymore?
Yeah, add 2 zeros onto the end of that for nowadays.
Right. Yeah, it was a little ridiculous. Okay, so
I'm like, I got a coupon for a wedding ring and the clipper.
Exactly, that's how this was. We're like, we have 2 styles of dresses, ladies. Pick which one you like the best. But that's it.
A or C. We fucked up on B, so we're not selling it.
Yeah, it's all kinds of fucked up. So the Warrens in this universe, they don't get called upon. I mean, we're pretty far into the haunting or the possession. And they even explain it. They say there's the 3 levels of, and I can't even remember, infestation, oppression, and then possession.
What was the possession?
Infestations first, infest the house, then oppression, beats them down, then possession once you're already beat down.
Yeah, which is exactly the process they use in this movie. You know, it started with the dog wouldn't come into the house, which honestly, if I buy a house and the first thing that happens is my dog won't walk inside, I'm walking right the fuck back out.
Something ain't right. Something ain't right. I'm out of here. Yeah. You're right, though. Yeah, if my dog don't go in, we're not staying here. They're just like, oh, I'll leave Sadie outside. I'm like, no, don't leave Sadie outside. Give Sadie something to eat and bring her inside.
Yeah, me and my wife looked at it when we were buying houses a couple few years back. We were looking at this one, and we opened the basement door to go down and look at the basement, and Britt opens the door and goes, oh, my God, ooh. And I just looked at the realtor, and I'm like, yeah, we haven't even had to see the rest of this house. Right. Like, I'm not – if that's the first reaction when she opens the door, then there's no point. Like, I'm not going to live here.
There's no reason for this. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
And it wasn't gross or anything. It was just like a really dark stairwell. It wasn't like spider webs or a bum shitting on a, in a box or anything.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm shitting that, in a box.
Yeah. That was just her reaction. I'm like, yeah, there's no point in seeing the rest of this house.
I like to think there's just humans down there taking a shit in a box and realtors are chasing away with brooms. Choo, choo. Gonna get somebody.
Like raccoons, but right. Their bums pooping in boxes. Right. Take your shit box with you.
We gotta get an exterminator out here. We gotta get rid of these shitting bums. Take your shit box with you. But yeah, then this one has a good creepy basement. But at least it was boarded up. Like, it, and I feel like if I found a room behind a wall, I would assume that the wall was put there purposefully.
Yeah, but I agree. And the last thing I'd want to do is like open it up and go on and venture around. But like your furnace and shit's down there. Like you got to go down there.
Oh, that's true. Oh, that's right. Because he did say, I'm trying to fix this furnace. And he was down in the basement, which didn't make any
sense. No, that's Christmas story.
The old man strung together a cloud of obscenities that's still above Lake Michigan. Yeah, that is good. Don't touch anything.
He mentioned that the furnace, like he couldn't find anything wrong with the furnace because they were saying how cold it was in there. But then you like later on you see the furnace when it's like panned in the basement. But I don't know. I feel like he's like, it looks like we got a cellar. It's like, well, no shit. You got basement windows on the outside of the house, dude.
Oh, that's true. where do you,
I guess you just hadn't found the staircase yet, but you would have found it eventually.
It's a mystery. That is true. I didn't even think about there would be the windows on the outside because there was light coming in.
Well, there was light coming in, and then at the end, the bird flies through it when when they're trying to get the demon all wrapped up and shit.
Wow, that was good, too. That was good.
The whole movie's good. This whole movie, I mean, it's easy to make fun of any movie, but this whole movie is, in my opinion, phenomenal. Fantastic. It still holds up.
And the game that they play, the hide and clap, I thought was done super well, and especially with the, it's just that shit in the shadows. You know, you see, and I love the fact that the first time the hands come out and they're drawing the mom to the wardrobe, that it's a long shot. You know, normally you would see that really close up. You know, you might see the hands come out of the clothes, but you actually see the arms from a long shot out or kind of like a medium shot, which I thought was really cool because you don't normally see that stuff and she's just wandering around blindly.
Right. Yeah. Because she's at the doorway.
Yeah.
And then you hear the clap and then she's like, third clap, and then you just see him slowly come out, and they're like big arms. Like, yeah, that is not her daughter.
Right. And this is the first we got of the song we kind of come to associate now with The Conjuring, that music box. That diddling, ding, ding, ding,
oh,
ding.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kid, it's still, as many times I've seen this movie, when Vera Farmiga's looking into that mirror on the, I still expect something's going to show up. When she's like, oh, you got to look, and it's behind you. When she's doing the music box for the first time, and that clown's popping up and down. I still anticipate.
Yeah, a little boy shows up and when Vera Farmiga's looking at it.
No, are you sure? The first time?
Yeah, you see, when the mom looks at it first.
Okay,
and
I'm thinking of the mom then. Yeah, when the mom's looking at it and nothing is there. I still anticipate something's going to be there. Tricking me.
I've seen this shit 30 times, and I feel like they're going to put something in it. They're going to put something new in it. I know it.
I don't know why my brain works that way, but I do.
Fucking Zack Snyder cut. They're going to put it out, and I'm not going to realize.
Re-release The Conjuring. I want to see an unfinished scene of a person behind the mom.
Yeah. Wow.
So dumb.
Spoiler alert. He wasn't in the room at that moment.
Right. It's amazing.
That's why you didn't see him. He wasn't there.
It's amazing. Snyder cut. Now I forgot where I was even going with my train of thought. Sorry. But yes, super, super good movie. And the family slowly getting possessed. And I do like that they didn't shy away from this, though. You know, we got a lot of that shadow type stuff. But when you would see that witch every once in a while, especially when she was up on top of the...
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing that they did like really close because it was the... It was the, man, there was so much crazy shit that happened in that first time that the husband was away for overnight.
Yeah.
Like the pictures all crashed down and the mom went down into the basement and then, you know, all the light bulbs and shit burned down. She got the match. That's the other thing too, is like, why would anybody try to like actually guide their way with a match?
Yeah.
Like, how much light are you really getting from a match?
You don't get enough.
I guess if it's pure darkness, maybe, but anyway, but it's still perfect with the fucking hands coming from behind her and clap.
Clap, clap.
And then then it goes to the girls, and you hear, after all that shit, and she's freaking out down in the basement, you hear the pounding on the wardrobe, and it's the girl hitting her head. And then so she brings her, you know, her sister brings her back over to the bed, and then it pans up, and you see the witch up on top of the wardrobe. Ooh. Like, all that happens all right together, and it's like, oh,
fucking
my God,
creepy,
man.
Too. It's creepy.
No matter how many times I see it, it's still fucking scary.
Because the designs, and I don't know if it's a James Wan thing that he just has a thing for creepy old ladies, but, you know, Insidious, we had the old lady, then we've got the nun, we've got this witch. He always
Dead
puts,
Silence.
Oh, Dead Silence, yeah, just watched that the other night. He's got a thing for creepy old ladies, but he's on to something because all of these creepy
fetish,
old,
man.
They're terrifying. Terrifying.
Yeah.
And so that was, yeah, on top of the wardrobe was really good. And the two girls, and I think this is where bad acting would have absolutely killed this movie. The two girls in the bedroom together where she keeps feeling the demon tug on her leg. She's like, Nancy, yeah, quit grabbing on my leg. When Joey King's looking into the, I think it was Joey King looking into the corner, and she's telling her, she's like standing right behind you. Like, that kid sold the shit out of that scene. And without that, it just wouldn't have worked. Like, you needed the talent in order to do that. And the idea of the other girls looking back there, you know, us as the observer, as the audience, she's like, there's nothing here, putting her hand into it. And the other one's terrified and can see it. It's just,
right.
Yeah, it's an uneasy situation right. to watch.
Yeah. And that's when she flips on the light and then it slams the door shut too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when they're, like, yeah, because I think they have to end up kicking the doorknob off or knocking it off with something or kicking the door in. Either way, it takes some degree of effort to get into it. And
right.
then we do see the witch in the tree at one point, which is really cool. But I love that.
That's when the Warrens finally get there.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, the mom
starts showing up with all the bruises and the clocks are stopping and stuff, and it's like, well, I think I'm just a hemophiliac, but I'm not sure.
Right. You know, I got an iron deficiency. Like,
oh, no, I gotta be possessed.
Yeah. Got an iron deficiency. And I do like though that it took them a little while to get to the Warrens, and when the Warrens show up, man, Vera Farmiga's good. You know, she doesn't ever, she's seeing this stuff and she explains it to him later. Well, I saw it behind you, I saw it behind your kids. But she just keeps going, just keeps moving forward, you know, as some kind of, I feel like if I had the ability to see that shit, I'd turn around and walk away every time.
Well, maybe like, after Bye. A while, she's just used to it, like that poker face. Cause like the first time I saw it, like, oh my God, there's something behind you, dude. Like, but like the 40th time that you like walked into a house and seen something like that, you're probably like, all right, good poker face. All right. I'll tell them about this shit later.
Good.
It's easier to not have everybody run and scream. I've learned this. Yeah. So I'll tell them about it later.
I'll let them know. I'll fill them in. Holding the ace king here. Yeah. We're going to go.
I'll wait until I see the woman hanging in the tree before I spill the beans. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, that was fucked up too. Because wasn't it the feet were behind the husband?
Yeah, she's out at the lake. And that fucking tree, man, that is like the coolest tree I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a good one.
And it makes for a great cover for the movie. And even in the second Conjuring, it's one of the things that Ed had painted.
He painted the house with the tree and the...
With that tree. He basically painted the DVD cover for the fucking Conjuring.
Right. Which was a good cover.
Yeah.
Was a very good very good poster.
But he walks up and is talking to her and she turns around and sees the feet there, and then it does that long shot from the up in the air, and as you see those two standing there with the nun hanging, or not the nun, the witch hanging.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I thought that was cool that it was a witch too. Like, it started as a witch. Because it's up in that area, man. You know, the Salem shit and
the persecution,
New England.
Yeah, all the persecution of these, which I don't even know, looking back at that, how anyone in their right mind could be like, oh, if you drowned, you're not a witch. If you're alive, you're a witch when you come out. You know, they do these really fucked up tests to see if somebody was a witch or not.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to burn you. If you don't burn, you're a witch.
Right.
What if I do burn? And then you're dead and you're not my fucking problem anymore.
And so this woman was a witch.
Yeah.
And like you said, over the course of this, she cursed the property because they'd hung her on
the
property.
She cursed the property and then killed herself, actually. She didn't.
Was that?
She killed herself.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, for some reason I thought she was killed. But I don't know why she would have killed herself.
They said that she killed herself. I can't remember why. Because they said out back in the tree is where whatever her name was hung herself.
Right. So who knows? Who knows why she hung herself? But either way, you're right. They're in Rhode Island. She's dead. Now the land has been cursed. So every person who's lived there, the mother of a child, goes nuts and ends up killing one of the kids before killing herself. This witch is like feeding on that. She takes over these people and
it's like a very hands-on Gretel.
Right. Yeah. Just kill your own kids. And and they did make Lily Taylor look fantastic. But that makeup on, when she's in the basement, they're like, you know, Lorraine Warren's yelling like, show me yourself, demon, show me yourself. And you see the half of the demon face through the bedsheet, through the tear in the bedsheet. Very good.
So did Lily Taylor, was she the witch every time you saw the witch then? Like on top of the wardrobe?
I don't think
was that Lily Taylor?
No, I don't think that was her on top of it. I think they had done really good because I was trying to see if they had anybody credited as the witch, but I'm not seeing anyone.
So, because there was like two, like, because the one time when it like rips the blanket, I didn't think that that was Lily Taylor. I thought that was the actress that was playing the witch.
Which it could have been.
And then they had the Lily Taylor witch makeup. And then they had, you know what I mean? Like, it was like when it was, you saw fully, it was her like turning into the witch, but then you had just like the straight up, like, that is not the same person underneath of that fucking blanket, you know?
No. And that was really good, too. Man, that was really good. The Conjuring made a ton of money. Man, can't clear my throat. It looks like it was made for an estimated $20 million and grossed a worldwide gross of $318 million. And that's why we're still...
I cannot believe that movie was made for only $20 million.
Which is crazy.
It is so fucking good, man.
But that's the thing that I feel a lot of Hollywood doesn't understand is you don't need a huge budget to make a good movie. You need a good story. You need to be able to start with a good story. And there's got to be the talent there, yes, to know where to spend your money. But as far as the effects go, I mean, we got the float, the stuff in the basement was probably where all the special effects budget went for the most part. Because he does a good job. James Wan, if you think about it, you know, his whole career was built on making a lot with a little. And the dude knows he's just got a good eye for horror. He has the ability to make these creepy movies for next to nothing. But yeah, $20 million doesn't seem like a lot. But it's...
No. Especially I guess it was 2013, so maybe Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga weren't pulling as much as you would think then.
Probably not. And he, you know, Patrick Wilson probably works with Juan for next to nothing because the dude has helped him out along. He's like a Travolta to a Tarantino. Like, I feel like Patrick Wilson started getting more after the Conjuring stuff once people started
seeing The Insidious was 2010, and he was in Insidious.
Right. So I feel like he just kind of goes with him. He'll go with James Wan, like, hey, you need me to do this thing? Yeah, I'll play Ocean Master. Give me a carton of cigarettes and a case of beer, and we'll call it good.
Oh, was he in Aquaman?
Yeah, he was.
That's cool.
And he was actually really good. I like Patrick Wilson a lot. I think he's great. So this, I'm trying to think what else we missed on the, if there's anything we missed on The Conjuring. It's just fantastic. I mean, there's not a lot to say outside of, this introduces the entire world. Vera Farmiga, Patrick Wilson absolutely kill it. All the kids kill it. And it's got some of the creepiest moments in the franchise. Hands down, some of the creepiest.
For sure. I think, you know, moving right on to the next. Well, I guess the next movie would technically be the new Annabelle, which neither of us have seen.
Right. I am excited to see it. So this is, from what I understand, Annabelle Comes Home is the demon kind of taking over a lot of the trinkets and stuff in the Warrens' home. So that room that they have with all the creepy stuff in it, I think the demon starts to do some of that. And then
it's like in Ghostbusters, when the thing blows up, it's just like going through, like unleashing all the different demons and shit.
When it spreads all over the city. That'd be good. Hey, what do you think about what do you think about Paul Rudd being in the new Ghostbusters?
I don't care.
Oh, see, I'm excited. I love Paul Rudd.
I like Paul Rudd. I don't know, man. Do we need another Ghostbusters movie? Make something else.
Yeah, that's true. Probably not. We probably don't, but they're going to get me with that even that tiny little teaser they put out was enough to sell me, like, you got my money for a ticket.
I haven't even seen that yet.
This is probably four months ago. You just this old abandoned barn, and the camera slowly pulling up to the doors, and then it opens up, and inside you've got a car under a cover, like a tarp almost, and it starts to blow off, and you see the Ecto-1 underneath there, and I'm like, that's
cool. Oh, nice. That is cool.
And it has the haunting music from the library from the first one. Yeah. It was good. Nah. Whoever did it, they knew how to hit all the nostalgia buttons.
I'll look at it. It's probably a fan movie. That's probably why it was so good. Or fan teaser.
No, this was a real one, but you're right. Some of them fan films are
they're better. They're fantastic.
Yeah. Better than what people see. Okay, so Annabelle Comes Home, I'm going to try and check out, hopefully this week, go to see that one. And then after Annabelle Comes Home was The Curse of La La Llorona. Why can I not get
La La Blah Blah Blah.
La Llorona. Your own, whatever.
La Llorona.
Llorona. Okay, that's right. So those came, but in the year of the story, it was Conjuring 71, Annabelle Comes Home 72, and Llorona 73. So those are all right in a row, and they happen relatively quickly. And that one hits video on demand, I want to say, in 2 or 3 weeks. I'll probably end up picking it up just because I've got all the other ones.
It's I saw that it hits disc August 6th. So it hits disc August 6th. So probably 2 weeks before that it'll be on VOD.
Right, right. So it'll be available. I do want to check it out now, knowing fully that it's part of the Conjuring universe. And I feel like they didn't market it as part of the Conjuring universe, which is weird for them to put that out and not even market it in that way whatsoever. Because I feel like you would get some money just based on name alone. If you tell people, yeah. Hey, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So this is The Curse of La Llorona has a 5.6 on IMDb. How did it do? It was made for $9 million, and apparently opening weekend made $26 million.
That's not bad.
And gross overall is $121 million. So for $9 million, they fucking killed it.
Yeah, they did it, but did they comparatively to the other Conjuring universe? You know, I wonder what the investors thought of when you see a return on The Nun.
Well, James Wan thought it good enough for him to direct the third movie.
Yeah, that's true.
For Michael Chavez. So it's got Laura Cardellini in it, man. When it comes out on VOD, I'm watching it.
Yeah. What did I just watch with her?
Linda Cardellini, sorry.
That show on Netflix.
What is that called? Dead to Me or
Dead
something?
Dead to Me, yeah. It was good.
Was it good? Is
yeah.
It good?
Oh, yeah. A lot darker than I thought it was going to be. Much darker. I was expecting much more, ha-ha, that's hilarious. And it was much more like, wow, that's fucked up. Like, that's a horrible thing. All right, so last one on the list that takes place in 77 is The Conjuring 2. And this one revolves around the Enfield haunting. Very famous haunting.
The Enfield poltergeist, I think, is what they call it.
You're right. That was the name of the book, I think. The first book. Or the one that the Warrens. Yeah.
That's what they refer to it in, like, the scroll at the end of the movie was the Enfield poltergeist.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. And I looked at some of the pictures from the actual haunting, and man, they nailed that. The rooms of the kids.
Like, yeah. They actually, at the end of the movie, they show them. Because I just finished watching that last night. They show all the comparisons. The only thing that's like not comparable is Ed and Lorraine Warren are much more attractive in movie version in real life.
Much
and actually, attractive. Lorraine Warren just passed away this past April.
That's right. Yeah, she did. And he's been dead for a while, though, right?
Yeah, I think I saw 2006.
Yeah, he's been dead for quite a bit.
My first introduction to the Warrens was there used to be this TV show called Paranormal State. It was about these kids from Penn State that did all this paranormal shit. And she would be on that show every once in a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That came on right when me and my wife got married. So I was like 2008, 2009. We used to watch that because it was like when Taps and shit was really big. It was actually before Ghost Adventures.
Oh, okay.
Which really like took over and ruined everything. Right. Like that fucking guy with his graphic tees.
Yeah, he was the, that was pretty bad. There was, there were so many of them ghost shows for a while.
It was flooded with them. But yeah, that Paranormal State one was like a weird, like I said, it was from Penn State. So, and they stayed in like Pennsylvania a good bit. So it was kind of cool because it was shit that we knew where that stuff was.
Right.
And then they would go else places like Ohio and then up to New England and stuff like that. I feel like the New England one is when Lorraine Warren was on, but I don't know. She might have come. I don't know. That was the first like introduction to Lorraine Warren. And I'm like, oh, and then when I saw this Conjuring movie, I was like, shit, I know who Lorraine Warren is.
Yeah. And I feel like I had heard about her somehow through the Amityville stuff.
Well, that would make sense because that's the opening to this movie. I guess right. To get back to the movie is they show and God damn, dude, that opening and Amityville scene is better than that entire fucking remake.
Yeah, which like, is it's sad to say, but you're right. And even the weird, the real quick, the way that it was cut with the her racking the shotgun.
Yeah.
And the sound, but then you had like these almost jump cuts. But it, you were only jumping a second, like a half of a second, just barely.
Yeah, it wasn't seeing the impact. It was you were hearing the noise, and you were seeing the damage of the kids getting shot.
Right. So but even with like her hand moving when she would rack it, I feel like it wasn't a full motion. They would like hit here and then cut back up half a second later at the top.
Yeah, it was like a Snyder cut.
Yeah, Snyder cut. So you would get the. It was really unnerving, and it made it more of a dream sequence or this, you know. She wasn't in a dream, but in a trance, I guess.
That was the whole their involvement of the thing is that they showed up with the Lutz family and the news crew and shit, and then they did like the seance at the table, and that was like the Warrens. From what I understand, I might actually read the book after I finish the stuff I'm on now, but it was like that was their involvement was that whole news conference, and that's when they kind of came out as like phonies and stuff, even though they did the stuff with the Perrin family beforehand. It was like, well, these people are just doing this for the attention.
Right.
And that was kind of the whole idea behind The Conjuring 2 was like to go into the Warrens doing this for attention thing, you know?
Yeah, because you do get a lot of that stuff in this one.
For sure, because that's even why I think towards the end that they are kind of not really eager to call it quits, but they didn't like have the heart in it like they did with the first movie. Like not the way that the movie was made, but the way that the character, like the Warrens, portrayed. Like, and even then, it was like a role reversal. Like Lorraine's like, we have to help this family. And then in this one, Ed's like, what are we going to do? We're going to tell this family no. Like, we've helped all these other families, and then all of a sudden, now we're going to say no.
Right.
You know. So they had. I don't know, man. Those two, like you said, the chemistry that those two have is fantastic.
Like you could see them being a real married couple. They're just so spot on.
Yeah.
So the. We open kind of like in the first Conjuring, we open with Annabelle, which is a huge real case. In this one, we open with Amityville, again, huge real case. And now we jump across the pond, end up over in England.
The mirror turn, though, that's what I wanted to say. When she is Ronnie DeFeo and killing the people, and it turns in the mirror, but it's her standing there, but he's in the mirror. That's like that right there. They fucking nailed it. It almost made me wish that the third movie was going to be in Amityville.
Right.
But they already did. Like the Warren's whole involvement was already done in this intro.
It was a beautiful opening. Beautiful opening sequence. And she just killed it with her eyes, like playing the role with her eyes.
Yeah.
And so we move on across the pond where the family of. I don't remember what were their names.
I don't remember either.
I can't remember because it was just the Enfield Poltergeist, but I can't remember the actual family name.
I want to say it was Harris. Nope. Hodginson.
Hodginsons. So the Hodginsons. Holy shit. This thing was made for $40 million and made $320.3 million.
See, that makes more sense because that's probably I bet you that The Conjuring 2 is the highest budget of all of them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. But still, for a $40 million budget to make 300, you know, we ooh and ah over, you know, the huge superhero movies, but you're looking at, you know, $350 million budget to make it for 40. It's impressive.
Yeah, it is.
So we're over in England, and things start to go bad pretty quick. We kind of jump right into it, which I think is good because we already knew who these people were. We knew who Ed and Lorraine were. We didn't have to spend a lot of time figuring out who they were. The thing with this one, again, it's a haunting of a demon trying to get to a child. But it's really weird in that we don't get the demon in this one for quite a while. It goes on. Like, we don't really get Valak for a long time. I don't think so.
Don't get Valak at all, except for at the Warren's house. You get Valak a little bit, because that's when it does the whole, which we already talked about, like, earlier. But, like, the whole shadow around the room thing, and then there was something else. There's the scene in the hallway when the little girl's like, "Mommy, who's that?"
And
like,
yeah,
but that's all a dream sequence.
And that was so good though, the way the Valak just floats away. There's no walking, no nothing like that. Valak just floating away, because in this house in Enfield, you think that it's this old man for the majority of the time, or at least I remember the first time I saw it, I thought it was the old man who was haunting these people.
And that's what I was going to ask is, and if you had a different opinion on this. So I think that that house in Enfield had two entities. I think it had the old man and it had the crooked man.
Yes.
So it had Bill Wilkins and the crooked man. So the house was haunted by two different entities. But then the way that they, that's where I think, because I do like The Conjuring 2 a lot. I like it a lot. But I definitely think it's weaker than the second one, is it leaves too many like answerable questions unanswered. Like how was Valak supposedly using Bill Wilkins and the crooked man to draw the Warrens over there? Or were those two entities there? The Warrens happened to be there. So the Valak entity used the infest, oppress, possess formula to take advantage of this already beaten down family.
See, and I think it was the latter, what you just said, like using that oppression, the infestation oppression, because Bill Wilkins wasn't a bad entity. He was being used just like everybody else. So I think Valak really wasn't controlling him. He was just trapped. Like he'd been
stuck. He was trapped, but he was controlling him because of the whole tape thing at the end with the cross of the tape is like, it won't let me go.
Yeah.
Help me, it won't let me go.
Yeah, so he was just being used. I don't think he was...
But who was he being used by is my question. Like, what demon was it? Was it Valak? Like, why would Valak try to draw them all the way? Unless it was just, like, to try to get them out of their comfort zone
And I don't know if Valak was... And I'm and maybe there's something, you know, we're missing in one of these other movies. And Annabelle Comes Home or... And there could be another piece of it there where they've expanded upon the lore a little bit. But I want to say Valak, because she saw, did we get the first her premonition of him dying? That was that was in the Amityville, right?
That was in the basement of Amityville. Yeah, because I was always confused, and I thought that maybe she saw Valak in the basement of the Purin house, but it was actually the Amityville basement. Like, the first couple times I saw this, I'm like, oh, so she saw, that's how they tied this in, is Valak was in the basement of that house from the first movie, but it was the Amityville basement.
Right. And so she was
there was a basement with shit covered over top of it. They all looked the same.
Right. Yeah. That was creepy too, with the all the stuff hanging, like you said. They do a good job with these movies of making just some creepy, creepy environments.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Either way, they end up over in England, and like you said, the crooked man I think is phenomenal in that I for so long I thought that was CGI. I didn't realize that was an actual human being doing that. And that
actor is great. Javier Botet, I think his name is. He's in like Wreck, and he does Mama. He's Mama
The
Creature and Mama. And it's weird because I can always tell it's him because I've seen so many movies with that guy in it. I recognize his rib cage. It's so weird. It's the weirdest thing. I'm like, nope, that's Javier Botet. I can tell by his ribs. But how, the dude's just like, he was Slender Man. He did Slender Man.
Okay. So he's just got it.
He's a creature guy. Yeah, he's a creature guy. But that's actually my least favorite part is the Crooked Man stuff. I like the crooked, like the rhyme and like the idea. And then when it's like towards the end, when he's like busting through the walls and shit, I think is really cool. But like when it transforms from the dog into the Crooked Man, I just thought that was weak.
I could see that. Because in so much of The Conjuring, we don't get everything. Nothing happens right in front of you like that. Everything happens in the shadows, you know? We don't see the little girl turn into a demon in Annabelle. You just see a pair of eyes that slowly grow until they're huge.
Right.
And so to see some of that, it feels a little out of place. But I don't like so much the crooked man actually coming down the hallway, but I like the little animation of the thing. And the song, the rhyme and
stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there was a crooked man with a crooked smile, Walter Crooked Mile. The way he says it and stuff is really cool in the movie. But I don't know. Like you said, it shows the dog morph. And then what happened to the dog? Like you never saw the dog again. Like was there ever a dog?
The dog was like, I'm fucking out of here. Like, get me out. I'm done.
But then it shows, like, you hear that rhyme, that like it's screaming the rhyme, and then it turns the corner and it's Janet turning the corner
I thought that was cool when she comes around the corner.
Yeah. So like, was Janet the dog who then turned into the crooked man? Like, where the hell did she come from? Because the little boy is the one who saw it, the little Stuttering Bill.
Right.
Is the one who saw it.
Stuttering Bill.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think the kid's name was Billy too, actually. And he had that stutter. Yeah.
Yeah, Billy. Billy. So where are we at here? The haunting, but I can't remember exactly how they got over there. How the Warrens got, like, how were they contacted? Was it the church? The church they did put him on.
They did the press conference. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
So they did the press conference thing with, I'm Bill Wilkins, I'm 74, yeah, and all that shit. So then, the voice changes and starts like screaming at him and shit like that. Like Bill Wilkins, kind of changes and stuff. So then the priest that the Warrens deal with all the time, it's the same one in the two Conjuring movies, but not the same one from like Annabelle and shit. I can't remember I didn't write his name down. He brings in the tape and he's like, "What do you think of this?" And then he's like, "Well, it sounds like, what, he got dementia or something?" He's like, "Oh, that voice is coming from an 11-year-old girl." And they're like, "Oh, I didn't see that coming."
Right.
And then that's when they have the whole conversation about whether they're going to go over there and take it. But that's how they get contacted. But then they're sitting at the coffee table, right? At the breakfast table talking to each other. And that's when I actually texted you last night, because I don't know if you can see that on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
They had that.
Oh, yeah. I want to say it was like five or six times in this movie, but I've never seen that one.
It said Valak right there on both windows. There was like a little, like that one was kind of cool because it was like love and then Alec or whatever. It was two different pieces of art. But on the other window, that was when it showed Patrick Wilson's camera angle. It just like blatantly said Valak, like in decorations on the wall,
which like, is nuts because I feel the first couple times I saw this, I only ever noticed the blocks in the books. It was books or blocks in the living room.
Oh, I missed that. I didn't even see that one.
Yeah, they're on the bookshelf. It spells out Valak like all the way across. Nice. I want to say they put it in the movie like five or six times. There's different.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah. I saw two of them then. So if you saw the one, and that's at least three. That's cool.
Yeah, which I think is awesome. Those kind of Easter eggs are a ton of fun. Yeah. It's not like an Easter egg that you need to understand the story or anything at all. It's just like, hey, this is a cool nod. Yeah. And it's, you know, the evil is around them.
Yeah, it's like Ready Player One. Oh, look, I saw Spawn. Okay, move on.
Right. Those are Ninja Turtles. So they do end up going over, and the movie, it's a good movie. It's a good horror movie, but not as good as that first one. And I think the girl, that Madison Wolf, who played Janet, did a fantastic job. Yeah. Very convincing. She really sold the role, and you felt for her. Like, you felt terrible for her. I do like Patrick Wilson with his back to her when they're like, "Hey, take the drink of water." God. And
so good. And it like forms into his head and shit.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Very slowly, really just good. Like subtle, real subtle change. You notice like this child is now a grown man.
And you see his mouth moving. That's the coolest part about it, is you see his mouth moving. Like when he's talking, it's not just like, and it's all pixelated and shit. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Very like deep depth of field. And they were able to completely. Yeah, it was good, man. Very good. The stuff under the water I thought was good. And I like how he fixed all that, though. Like, just a couple of turns on the old wrench. He's like, "There we go."
There was like a swimming pool's worth of water underneath of this house. Right. And he's like, "Up, fix. It'll drain itself. Don't worry.
Yeah,
might don't take worry a about month it. Or two.
Don't worry. We'll make it happen." But overall, The Conjuring 2, it's good. And this whole universe... You know, I don't want to spend too much more time going over, because I feel like we've talked through all the movies pretty well. Yeah. But this whole universe, it's interesting in that we have so many studios and production companies and everything trying to build universes or build these worlds. And The Conjuring did it when I didn't even know if he wanted to do it. I don't know if James Wan set out to do it, or if he just made a really cool movie and then was like, "Hey, let's see what happens."
I think that he made a really cool movie and then it happened, because like, so with The Nun, I saw this about production stuff, and it was like interviews and shit. And he's like, "Well, if The Nun," like, this is the way he started the answer to whatever the question was, is like, "Well, if The Nun does well, I have a cool idea where the second one could go, you know?" And that's like his mindset on it, is like, if it does well, I think this is where the next one could go.
Right.
Which I think it's like, well, when we like, we don't get it as much nowadays as we used to, but like a lot of back in the 80s and 90s, I feel like the sequels were greenlit before the movies were even released. Now they wait, and like, unless it's like obviously like Marvel or Star Wars or some shit like that, but a lot of these movies, like, well, let's wait and see how it does, and in a couple of years we'll pick up production on the next one. But back in like the fucking Puppet Master days and shit, like, they were making they're fucking spitting them out every 10 seconds. Right.
Well, and it's, you know what plagued Batman near the end there with Batman and Robin is it was all about the merchandising, and they were like, hey, you need to make this movie super fast so we can sell some toys.
Yeah, we got to make them fucking Happy Meal toys. You know, those take a long time to print those molds.
Right. I just found a bunch of Happy Meal toys I had in a bag. I had some Fraggle Rock that were the vehicles were like carrots and shit and like a radish, and they were riding in them. Oh, and some nice Batman Return toys. The McDonald's used to have it all. You could get VHSs at McDonald's. Or you'd get it, you know, they had the glasses, the like cut in. I remember one of the Batman movies, they had like glasses with the faces cut into them. Two-faced.
Yeah. And, I had the my mom still has it at her house, the Riddler one. It's like all etched and stuff. I gotta get it. Like, I need fantastic to drink coffee out of that. It's but glass, it'll burn the fuck out of my hand, but I want to drink coffee out of it.
Right. With these ones though, I think it's a good thing that they're waiting to see, you know, do the fans want more of this? Because if they do, then let's make another movie. And with somebody like James Wan, I feel like the dude probably has 40 or 50 ideas in his head at all times.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, constantly on a
fuck state as fans, we have ideas in our heads that we just don't have the ability to do anything with at some
I think you
to
have,
that, to that
I think
scale.
For you confuse the word ability with motivation. those are two
but it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, I would say there's some of that there. Because for me, you're right. You know, you have tons of great ideas, but sometimes it's just overwhelming to even try and start to think about these ideas.
Yeah. And then it turns out shitty. You never want to do anything again.
Right.
It's like, oh, this sucked. I hate it.
That's the thing.
Watch
too.
It anyway. Here it is. I'm going to call it Slender Man.
Oh, that movie's bad. I almost want you to watch it just so you got to suffer through it. So other people got to suffer through it with me.
I don't know.
There could have been something there, but there wasn't. So yeah, overall.
I need a Snyder cut.
Over Snyder cut. I want a Snyder cut of Toy Story 4.
Yes.
So overall, the Conjuring universe, I'm a big fan. I think they've just done something really cool with it, and they continue to do. We got Conjuring 3. I want to say is greenlit, and the Crooked Man. Yes.
I don't know if the Crooked Man is actually fully greenlit, but the Conjuring 3 is actually in production and is set to release next September 2020. And what that's going to be about, do you know what that's about, or do you want to even go into that at all?
So from what I've read, I did a little bit of reading on it last night and a little bit this morning, that it was the first case in the United States court case where the guy of Arnie Johnson, who claimed he was possessed at the time,
possessed by a demon and killed his landlord.
Right. Killed his landlord.
Probably because of a leaky fucking faucet in the basement that Ed Warren had to come fix.
That's kind of awesome.
So, yeah. So this is going to jump us up to 1981 because that's when this all took place, which will, I think that'll be kind of cool to get that like late 70s, early 80s aesthetic in this universe. Cause it's all been, you know, 70s for the most part. So what the Warrens' involvement is there is a family in this apartment complex that the son was possessed, and they came in to like exorcise the son, and they brought priests and everything in to exorcise the son. David, I think is what his name was or is. And
the demon jumped.
They say that the demon jumped into Arnie, and then Arnie got in a fight with his landlord and killed the guy because of the possession. But so I think that this movie's going to jump around with the court proceedings and like the haunting and exorcism stuff, kind of like the exorcism of Emily Rose.
That'd be cool.
I think we're going to kind of get one of those movies.
I'd be all right with that for sure. And there is the Nun 2, I think, is greenlit.
Oh, did they greenlight the Nun? I didn't see that.
I want to say that it's greenlit.
Okay.
The, because I'm trying to look at the, yeah, because the, I mean, I'd be shocked if they didn't. It was made for $22 million, and it grossed worldwide $365 million.
Yeah, it killed it.
So it's actually the highest grossing of all of them, which is kind of wild to think about. But yeah, highest grossing of all these movies. You know, they've spent a total of $139.5 million on these movies, and they've made $1.7
billion in return. Wow, good for them, dude. Good for them.
Yeah. So right on.
Actually like to see another Nun because from 1951 until, I mean, there's 20 years before we actually find out, you know, what happens to Frenchie.
To Frenchie, which we never even really brought up, but he was in the exorcism video from the first Conjuring.
Yeah, which that's the only place that they kind of screwed up is because they talk about his like tormented past, being molested by his father and stuff like that. Which I guess that could have been, but like you never really got that vibe from him.
Him in the movie,
in the Nun movie, he was like the fucking Canadian guy that was traveling the world basically because he could.
Yeah, and he was, and who knows? Maybe he got. I would hate to think he got molested as an adult, but maybe he got molested after the fact. Maybe he took off and, like, once he already had the demon in him, once he had the upside down cross on him.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we're trying to fill in holes that.
I think that might be the only, because they were trying to, like, give in a backstory to this little blip in the first Conjuring movie, and then they actually gave that character a backstory, which that tie from the Nun to the Conjuring, I think, I mean, they couldn't have done that better. Like that fit that how Valak got into her world perfectly.
Yeah, it was good. So that's that wraps up the Conjuring universe. And again, it was just it's good. If you've never taken the time to watch these things, it's a ton of fun. They're fantastic movies. And did you have
The Conjuring is currently on Netflix if anybody wants to rewatch it, or I doubt somebody went through this whole thing and not having seen the movies, but if you have.
Right. I'm really excited to watch this now, but I want to see the fucking Snyder cut. I didn't want to see that.
The one thing I wanted to add too is there's actually a book about this, the case, the Arne Johnson case. It's called The Devil in Connecticut, if anybody wants to check that out before the movie comes out.
Sweet. I might have to, I'm going to put it up in my browser right now. The Devil in Connecticut.
Yeah, I'm going to see if there's an audiobook.
Which there very well could be. Yeah. I mean, it, because it looks like it, it was published in 83. Man, the 80s books had great covers. Like they always had the gnarliest text, the gnarliest font on them. Okay, well, thank you, sir. It's awesome, man. Can't thank you enough for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
Filling in while Josh is out doing German things. I was watching, where was I looking at the news though? Like all of Europe is getting blasted by some heat wave.
Oh, really?
Like, some nasty heat wave. So Josh, hopefully you're drinking lots of water. Hydrate.
He's probably sitting on a rooftop naked. That seems like a very German thing to do.
Yeah, it's a very German thing to do. Sit out. Yeah, nothing but a banana hammock. Just Josh up on chest to the sun, absorbing the sun like Superman. All right, man. So for the International House Forers podcast, I am Joe Merle.
I'm Will.
And we will be back with more things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre.